This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Each year, Americans waste the equivalent of $165 billion in food. By one estimate, grocery stores alone throw away 10% of our total retail food supply because it has perished or expired. Well, a group of young women set about to do something about that. They created an app called FreshSpire. It hopes to slow how much food is thrown away by local grocers by making discounted prices on expiring food available to consumers. Last year, that app is the winner of the 2014 Social Entrepreneurship Conference. This year, they're finalists for the Emerging Issues Prize for Innovation. Joining us to talk about FreshSpire is Gabrielle Beaudry. Welcome, Gabrielle. Good to have you here.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Also joining us is marketing professor at Winston-Salem State University, Notice Pagiavalos, right?
Good morning. Happy to be here. Thank you.
Good to have you here. Gabrielle, tell us a little bit about FreshSpire. How does it work, first of all?
Sure. So it is a mobile app and text notification system. Basically, when the employees of a grocery store do their daily markdowns, they upload that information, and it's sent out through the mobile application and the text notification system to reach shoppers. That discount information is from produce that's nearing its expiration, or maybe it's cosmetically imperfect. Either way, if it's not sold, it'll be thrown into a landfill. And so we want to make those discounts available to all shoppers.
And we just got the numbers, $165 billion. I saw another consultant that said it's 1 in 7 truckloads of fresh produce get thrown away every year. So it's a lot.
Sure.
This gets the word out. Certainly the grocers have known this for a long time. They get that this is about to expire. They might have a bin that says, you know, seconds or day old or whatever.
Exactly.
But now you're getting the word out. So where did the idea come from?
My team, it's me and four others, we got together. We went to the North Carolina School of Science and Math for high school, and we got together for a competition called Conrad Spirit of Innovation Challenge. It's based on sustainability, and some of the sectors were just too daunting, too big, you know, energy or like, you know, another great water filter. But food waste we saw to be an unbelievable problem that didn't have so much attention to it. And so we did our research and we found this communication issue between grocers and shoppers. And we thought, wow, this needs to be addressed. So that's where it came from.
Notice, Pagiavalos, this is exactly the kind of thing you deal with. Young, creative people who see problems but can't figure out how to apply their talent in the right scale to a problem they feel they can solve, right? Is that part of what you do as a marketing professor?
It is. In a sense, we devise systems quite often for different populations and target groups. But the most efficient way to organize one's operations is to take a very close look at your community itself. If you are a local university, and that goes back to the argument who will do what, in what capacity. Some major institutions that have doctoral missions have to produce basic research, have to push the frontiers of sciences to find new things because they're funded and expected to do that. Other institutions like a historically black college and university like ours, we have a different mission, a different population to train to be the next generation of leaders. So the intelligent combination is for one institution to do its own plan and its own adjustments, but you have to be honest with the data. You cannot pretend you're someone else's institution or someone else's mission. For instance, we had a very interesting conversation recently about social entrepreneurship among folks from other UNC institutions, sister institutions, and we were discussing when was the program really on the ground, how did it happen? And someone mentioned 2001 and et cetera. And then I was considering myself my answer, to be honest and truthful. And I realized actually that the mere inception of our institution was social entrepreneurship, but nobody called it that. So when in 1892, Dr. Atkins decided to create a school to train African-American teachers for African-American school children, he did social entrepreneurship. We just didn't call it that for 100 years plus. So now it came back to be a component of our thinking, but for us it has always been the whole fabric of our institution to do social entrepreneurship. We're not sophisticated enough to call it that.
Well, and that gets back to something you thought, Gabrielle. You thought, oh, energy systems, all of these other things a little too large, but food waste. And yet, in the way that Notice is sort of calling our attention to this, if you just change the frame of focus a little bit, you realize your app bears directly on energy use and energy consumption because of the amount of waste that would be limited if we could get the app in full use, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point.
So these things are all connected, and it's just the way you come at it as a student. And, of course, from your point of view, an app is something that you might be thinking about more generally than other kinds of systems. So now tell us about the preparation as you get ready for this conference. You're going to do something now. You're aiming to win a contest. What kind of preparation do you do?
Yeah, so the North Carolina School of Science and Math was actually super supportive of these, like, innovation competitions and projects from the students. And we were put in a class called Applications of Entrepreneurship. And we learned, you know, to write a business plan and to pitch effectively, to make a slide deck. And that was a lot of our preparation came from that. And then from there, just a few of the projects were selected to compete in this undergraduate conference. And my teammates who went said it was incredibly scary to compete with these people that you'd usually be taking advice from. But the nerves went away and they came out.
And you developed it. You worked together in group. How big was your group?
It's five people.
So notice, how do events like this, the entrepreneurship conference, for instance, and other conferences, how do they work, or do they, to bring these innovations into the business world? Do they see the light of day?
They do. Of course, not in high percentages, because that is expected. In a sense, quite often I take pride, and in a joke almost to my colleagues, that I say I take a special pride that I reject 90% of the offers that come to me. Because that is the logic, that is the whole process of entrepreneurship. So the projects that end up, like Gabriel's, to go to the final stages of a competition are very well written. They have concepts, they have illustrations, they have some logic how to go about it. So they have a chance to succeed. However, there is a gap or a valley, as sometimes it's called, after a successful introduction and excitement, then to scale up to operations, there is a funding gap quite often. And that's where young entrepreneurs fail. They have the initial capital and the energy to do so, but when it becomes an operation of 6 or 7 or 10, then different resources are required to manage and to fund and to run. And that is very interesting. We see quickly the scale-up quite often discourages development for the future.
We're talking about entrepreneurship and innovation today on The State of Things. Talking with Gabrielle Beaudry, who is the co-founder of FreshSpire. It is a winner of one particular innovation contest and is a finalist in another. Notice Pagiavlis is a professor and coach at Winston-Salem State University. You know, you pointed out something kind of interesting. You're in a position to know that funding, that taking it the next step is important. To what extent do you act as a kind of filter and say, look, this idea isn't going to make it, knowing that you've got some young minds who you'd like to encourage? How do you play that role?
It's very elegant in a sense, because you do not want to discourage creativity or energy, because sometimes the last thing somebody wants to hear from me is that you cannot make it, because that's a theme in their life so far. So quite often, not only on campus, because I have also an office in an incubator nearby, actually I call it nursery, not really incubation, because incubation assumes people coming in and out in a year or two and they're ready to go. I call it nursery because I was planning to keep them for 5 years at least until they're ready. So it's our own way. And I have an office there and I have access to the community. And quite often I have interviews with folks that have wonderful ideas. Most of them are of necessity, not necessarily the opportunity that comes from an investment. But I have to escape my misery. I have to do something of my own. And in that case, we spend an hour or two talking about marketing ideas, who's the options of service, or what are the qualifications. And it always comes down to, and now tell me, what is your score? Well, Doug, when I was in the army, I had a problem, and then my divorce, I lost my house. And in the end, embarrassingly most of the time, they would admit they have a 530. And with a 530, you have no chance to do anything, unfortunately, in a community like ours or anywhere else.
Well, how does that change in a historically black university like yours? What are the differences and what are the similarities in terms of the kind of coaching you do?
Well, our coaching is more involving components that could be taken for granted in other institutions. For instance, our students are mostly local, nearby communities and counties. Most of them have not traveled really anywhere far, especially outside the state sometimes. We're surprised to hear that. And it's first-generation students, so they do not have really the wisdom of a father, a mother, a grandfather, how to do things correctly. Finances are very difficult. Close to 90% of our students require aid to go. So we have a generation that is not ready to go basically to college, but they have to. And we try to to hug them as a family more than an institution. We know they have personal problems. We know they don't know exactly how to do things perfectly. They have the energy, the wisdom, the intelligence to move on. So our nurturing is more of a family atmosphere with advice and personal issues in addition to academics. Academics never take second place. You have to do that correctly in the first place, no matter how painful it might be. But on a personal level, our institution has a capacity and has a history of taking the person more personally than the student.
Gabriel, where are you right now in the process? You're trying to get funding. Are you at the next step where you're trying to bring this your app to life?
That's the plan. After the funding comes the application development, and then out to the world.
And so, what's that? That's a whole new world, right?
Yeah, to all of us, the startup world is completely new. But we're excited to be part of it.
Well, good luck with that, and good luck with the Emerging Issues contest as well. Gabriel Beaudry, co-creator of the food-saving app Freshspire. Freshspire won last year's NC Social Entrepreneurship Conference and is a finalist in this year's Emerging Issues Prize for Innovation. Notis Pagiavlis is a mentor to four teams participating in this year's North Carolina Social Entrepreneurship Conference. He's a marketing professor at Winston-Salem State University. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you for having us.
Wonderful for having us. Thank you.
Coming up, more about innovation and creating innovation spaces in the state of North Carolina from the State of Things, North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.